Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast, featuring comic book, movie, and video game news and reviews. And now your hosts, AJ and Martin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Panelcast. This is episode 117. I'm AJ, and I'm here this week with Martin.
Hi, guys.
This week, we're going to be going over a lot of the news coverage that came out from Comic-Con. And I'm also going to be doing a lot of reviews on some of the books I read because I didn't go to Comic-Con. Martin has some obvious disdain for his adventures in Comic-Con, which we'll go into greater detail with. All that and a lot more right after this break.
Hey, everybody. This is Lou Guevara, and I invite you to take a look at my stuff at ForbiddenPanel.com. And you can also hit me up on Facebook at RibbitsComics@Facebook.com. And you can take a look at my blog spot at RibbitsComics@Blogspot.com. And I hope to see you guys there.
And welcome back. It's been a while since you guys have seen us. We've been a little bit busy with Comic-Con and all that madness happening.
Seen us? Do you mean to tell me people are watching me?
I know I am.
Well, that's all that matters. But strangers? I don't know. If you guys are watching, I'm sorry. I shave with my clothes on, and I don't shower without a bathing suit on, so I know you're not having fun.
And what's sad is it's a Black Adam bathing suit. Not even a Superman. He's just a traitor in that manner. We've been, pretty slammed. I want to say a big, big thank you to everybody that showed up to our dinner at the Gas Lamp. Preview night of WonderCon, Comic-Con. It meant a lot to me to see that we have that many fans and that many people showing up. And just a thank you as well to the Gas Lamp Strip Club for all the cooperation, all the help that they gave us. That was just, it was probably my favorite part of Comic-Con. And to be honest with you, the only part of Comic-Con, because I didn't go the rest of the time. Martin, you were there. You were on the floor. Why don't we go ahead and start with some of the stories that came from the floor or came out?
Okay. Well, there was obviously big news, and it reached beyond Comic-Con really quickly. One of the biggest announcements of the weekend, of course, is that Superman movie sequel has been announced officially. There will be a Man of Steel 2. The kicker is it's going to involve Batman. So the rumors that we were going to get a 2015 Justice League movie got twisted up a little bit. We're going to see Man of Steel 2 in 2015 instead. And then we'll be seeing a Flash movie and a Justice League movie following the years after that. So that was kind of interesting to hear that they are going to expand the DC universe. They're bringing in a new Batman. And you and I have kind of talked about this a little bit, too. The way they're bringing in the Batman, it's going to be coming off of the Dark Knight Returns storyline.
Yeah, that's what... if you notice the logo that they're using for the Batman... Basically, what you're seeing right now is the World's Finest logo, where the Superman has overimposed the Batman logo. But the Batman logo that they're using is from Frank Miller, The Dark Knight Returns. So,
Zack Snyder added that, too, that he wanted that book to be an inspiration for it.
Which leads me to wonder, how are they going to pull that off, considering that, Christian Bale doesn't want to do Batman anymore.
Right.
So they're going to have to get an older person to play. It would be kind of awesome to see somebody along the lines of Clint Eastwood or something play, but
that's kind of old for a Justice League movie.
It's a way, the end of Dark Knight Returns, Rises movie, I can't remember the titles anymore, the last Batman movie, they left it open so that J. Gordon Levitt can take over the role. And so I don't understand why they don't just go with that. They've already got somebody that's willing to do it, that has the chops for it. All they got to do is age him up a little bit and beef him out, and he's good to go.
Yeah, make him have some road miles on him. And he's been out there. He's been fighting crime for a long time.
Right.
In Gotham City, and now they're on a journey now that involves both heroes' powers. And it's very clear it's going to be a fighting movie between the two heroes. They've already said that as well, which was interesting.
Right, having an actor come out and portray it and read out the lines from basically Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Tells me that they're going to fight, it's going to get it on, so I just wonder what's going to happen at that point. Does that mean that they're going to lead in, basically take Dark Knight Returns and and work it that way. Like, is Superman going to be an agent for the government at that point? You know?
Which we did see at the end of Man of Steel. He was talking with the government. Not exactly buddy-buddy with him, but he is back. Maybe, you know, they say, we need you to go get Batman for us. And Batman's going to be like, whoa, 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 I don't want your ass in Gotham smashing buildings.
Right. Which,
DF out.
Which all the memes that are coming out about that have been cracking me up lately.
Yeah, I know. That's hilarious. I mean, that's all it was Superman destroying Metropolis. It'll be interesting to see. I would like to see things like the Batwing involve, you know, travel. I don't want to see Batman being carried around by Superman. And I was actually hoping more so that it wasn't going to be Batman versus Superman, because I really wanted the Justice League storyline to be more about that's when Batman and Superman met, kind of a little bit what they did with the new DC 52 story.
Don't get me started on that story.
I know. We'll get there. We'll get there. But they've already thwarted plans for that as well, as I have coming up in another Comic-Con report. So, for fans, Man of Steel 2 is coming. The real fans are already calling it a Batman versus Superman movie, so maybe we shouldn't call it Man of Steel 2. And yeah, 2015, get excited.
Or something.
Yeah.
Other news that came out of Comic-Con was, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
The first footage of seeing Electro, Jamie Foxx's portrayal of Electro, as well as a pre-CGI Paul Giamatti running around as the Rhino. I don't know, I'm kind of excited about this movie. I've rewatched The Amazing Spider-Man recently and realized I really dig it. But until they snap Gwen Stacy's neck, I kind of up in the air about it. But at the same time, the fact that they had Mary Jane come out, they filmed her scenes, and then they said, you know what, never mind, fuck Mary Jane, and cut her scenes from the final cut, makes me wonder what's going on there.
Yeah. What were they afraid she was going to steal the story from?
Right.
So.
But everything that they had talked about at the panel leads me to believe that the third or fourth film will be The Sinister Six.
Right.
And I'm very excited about that.
So that was one of the cool announcements, that there's going to be a third movie and then a fourth movie. And one of the cool things Mark Webb was saying was the fourth movie is not necessarily a Spider-Man movie.
Right. That it's going to evolve at some point. And they're already casting for the next two movies.
Yeah. Oh. So that was really cool. That was a cool expansion on the idea. The other thing I liked was, and this is kind of off the panel story, but Jamie Foxx and Andrew Garfield showed up to the Amazing Spider-Man Tumblr meetup as a surprise to all the fans who were there. So they're just kind of, you know, some nerds hanging out in a little place off-site. And here walk in Jamie Foxx, Mark Webb, and Andrew Garfield to surprise them. Which, if you've seen any of the videos on YouTube, it's really cool. And that was really cool of them. And that's something that Andrew Garfield has been pushing since the first Spider-Man movie, when he showed up at Comic-Con as a fan to ask a question of the panel in costume. And he's just always been doing things like that. And there's a lot of pictures of him playing basketball with kids on the set while they're filming and other such things. So that was it's a really cool production team, and it seems like they're having a lot of fun with it. But I would really, really, really like to know why Mary Jane is either bumped to the third film and or recast, which is still a rumor.
Right. And also the appearance of the Gentleman in this movie and the appearance of Harry Osborn in this movie, too.
Yeah.
That's going to be kind of cool. But, you know, that leads me to another thing. Guest appearances at Con. I don't know if anybody has been looking around the internet and seen all this stuff, but Andrew Garfield dressed as Spider-Man. Okay, you had Johnny Galecki dressed as Bosch from Star Wars showing up at his own panel and asking questions of the cast of The Big Bang Theory. And then the big one is Bryan Cranston walking away around all day dressed as Walter White and showing up to the panel with the Walter White mask on and then taking off and revealing, hey, it's Bryan Cranston. What the heck?
Yeah, that was hilarious. And then there's another one with Matt Smith, who plays Doctor Who, of course, walking around as Bart Simpson on the exhibit hall floor.
Right.
To the BBC America booth and asking fans about the toys and saying how silly they were. They really got out there and participated this year.
Yeah, they had fun, but at this point, it's getting to that. You know, here's what's sad. I remember going to Con as early as 5 years ago and seeing these big-name people wandering around the floor without any protection or without costumes and just being able to enjoy themselves. And nowadays, it's so bad that they have to don these costumes so they can do their shopping and wander around. I literally bumped into Seth Green on the floor, and he had like a big monster bodyguard with him, and he just ran away whenever fans tried to show up. you know, but he was trying to get his shopping done as well, so I can understand that, but still.
I actually met him on the floor at a signing. He drew a picture for me, for my friend Jose, and even while he was there, they had security all the way around the table, and they only allowed 60 people per day at the signings, and he was just there for this one day. So only 60 people got to meet him at this little booth space. But even then, there were people popping up trying to take his picture. And it wasn't even his booth. The guy, the creator of the company, was actually there signing and drawing for friends and fans, too. And nobody was really paying any attention to him. It was all for Seth Green.
Yeah.
So, I'll put that in my rant shortly.
Another bit of news that came out is Gina Carano seems to be tying on her career to the comic book world. Her and comic creator Rob Liefeld are teaming up for a feature film version of Liefeld's comic Evangeline. The comic story deals with a fallen angel cast down to Earth and on the mission to find and protect the One, someone who holds the key to saving mankind from demons and other monsters. It's going to be a low-budget film, but it's something for Carano to tie onto and hopefully make sequels out of to finally get her into a franchise. But they're going to try and change it and make it into an Underworld series type film. But honestly, at this point, I don't care because it's Gina Carano, and I would let her break my arm.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I love you. Please don't join Rob Liefeld's cult.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, she's cool. She's been doing better and better in films. It was cool to see her in Fast and Furious 6 this year.
Especially as the bad guy. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah, she was awesome, and just to see how she's been growing with her roles has been cool. So it's cool to see her there. I've been expecting to see her pop up on like one of the superhero TV shows, like Arrow, and things like that. There's a lot of roles out there that she could take on, and I also see her taking on a role like Wonder Woman, which I think would be awesome.
I don't know. She's got the soccer girl legs, you know. I don't think she can pull off Wonder Woman, but
I think she has the Amazonian look.
Yeah.
Beef up for it. I just don't know that if she could pull off the angry Amazonian side of it, especially the way that the Justice League is portrayed now. Wonder Woman's more young girlish than a grown woman. So, yeah. But good luck to her, and hopefully this Evangeline thing will turn into something.
Well, you know, there's plenty of other side Amazonian characters that she could pick up instead of just being Wonder Woman herself. Yeah. So
she'd be a cool Big Barda too.
Yeah.
The next piece that I have from Comic-Con is going on to the next big announcement from Comic-Con, which, of course, made fanboys have to change their panties after Joss Whedon came out on stage at the end of the Marvel panel. They went through, they, of course, did the Captain America 2, which was cool. People were happy to see.
Well, how cool was it that Tom Hiddleston came out as Loki and verbally abused the crowd? I thought that was awesome.
That was interesting. And the story behind that, how he actually had to, like, sneak in to flying in. He didn't fly into San Diego and then drove down, kept under wraps, came in like, a mask, they were saying, or something,
yep.
And then went backstage and changed. But, yeah, he came out and he did the whole Loki speech.
Yeah.
Which was really cool, and led into the Thor 2 panel, which Thor 2, of course, people excited for. You know, Marvel fans, of course, want to see that. Other fans want to see it. Loki fans were crazy for it. Absolutely just love Tom Hiddleston. Everything he did over the course of the weekend. He did a couple panels across the street at Nerd HQ that were sold out days in advance. People were waiting in line half a day ahead of time just to try and get seats in an assigned seat venue, which I thought was funny. But they, you know, he was just really popular. And I think he'll help that movie a lot more. And give them a little bit more boost in fans and fangirls who want to see him. But the big news was Kevin Feige is like, okay, thanks for coming for the Marvel panel. Starts to walk off stage, comes back to the podium, goes, oh yeah, one more thing. And Joss Whedon takes the stage and just says, hey guys, you know, thanks to the fans, of course, and then says, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about Avengers. Throws up the new Avengers 2 logo for 2015, The Age of Ultron.
Which I'm getting more and more upset about the more I hear about it.
Yeah, I was sad to hear that this is not going to be the Ant-Man tie-in. Hank Pym will not appear, but does that...
No. It's not that he won't appear, it's that he is not the creator.
Yeah.
That bothers me. It bothers me that they're completely ignoring the fact that Thanos was at the end of the last movie.
Yep.
So how are they going to pull that off?
And that whole rumor mill about Vin Diesel possibly playing Thanos out there right now was weird. Are they going to try and tie that in like Guardians of the Galaxy movie maybe and then bring him back for Avengers 3? There's a lot of twists and turns going on with it. The other thing was I've been reading the recent Age of Ultron comic when it first started, and I wasn't too thrilled with it. I didn't follow. I kind of quit after the third issue. Yeah, third issue. I gave it 3 issues, and I just couldn't get into it. So, the other interesting thing from it was during the little trailer he did leading up to the title card being displayed was he showed the Iron Man helmet. He showed Captain America's shield. They talked a little bit about the Hulk. They, however, left out Thor. There was no representation of Thor in this little trailer before the Ultron helmet appeared and then the new title card. And rumors have it that Chris Hemsworth is talking about leaving after Thor 2. This is his third film, and he was not necessarily part of the 9-picture deals that everybody else got. And so he could theoretically walk away, which may just be a money thing, you know, give me more money to stick around longer, or they're writing Thor out.
Which is fine with me, because you know what? They have other gods they can bring in. They can bring in Ares, who's my favorite. They can bring in Hercules. You know, they got other people they can bring in. Yeah. I'm not too worried about it. And honestly, let's be honest. I mean, in the Thor movies, all they act as are gateways. They're not really all that great. I don't think so, anyway.
And with Tom Hiddleston not being in Avengers 2, it's like, why bother keeping Thor around?
Right. And then when I rewatched Avengers recently, and Thor really didn't do anything but sit on the tower and shoot lightning, you know, and have the funny scene with the Hulk. And, you know, that was about really it. He really didn't do nothing in the Avengers movie. And word is, has just been released today, that the next Avengers movie is going to be predominantly the Black Widow show. They're going to have her be more predominant, have a bigger role in it, and kind of focus around how a person without powers is able to hang with these big boys.
Yeah,
so
and a female, too, so that's really cool.
Right, with that coming out, you know, do they really need a Thor at this point? But I'm still upset at the fact that what are they going to do with Thanos? And the fact that every other news source out there suddenly forgot about Thanos at the end of the Avengers movies, and it's all Ultron, Ultron, Ultron. Joss Whedon has gone on record to say that it will not follow the storyline of the Age of Ultron, which has recently appeared in comic books, which is kind of cool, but how do you have Ultron without Hank Pym? Like, seriously. And if it's Ultron, are we going to see Wonder Man? Are we going to see Grim Reaper? Are we going to see The Vision? Are we going to see any of these characters? I just don't know how it's going to play out. And with Vin Diesel been running around saying that he's going to have a love story, that makes me think that, well, we already know Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are showing up, so maybe he will be the voice of The Vision.
Because
The Vision and Scarlet Witch are married.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see that, but it's all speculation at this point, and until IMDb updates the damn page, we're not going to know.
Well, the other thing is, we've already heard a lot about Phase 3, where they're hunting out a Doctor Strange character that they'd like to take on Tony Stark's role as kind of the key player in Marvel Comics movies, and they're working on that big time, too. Where does he factor into these Phase 2 movies that are going to be coming out next summer?
Does this mean we're going to see a Defenders? Because that's
so there's a lot of characters they can expand on, too. So for losing Thor, it's not a big deal. But it's just interesting to see like what they could do with all this. Plus the Guardians of the Galaxy and the big names that they're getting to play smaller roles in that film. And
you know, I'm more excited about Guardians of the Galaxy than anything, especially with the recent reboot of the comic book, which has been an awesome comic book. Because I was never a big fan of Guardians of the Galaxy. However, they recently showed up in Ultimate Spider-Man in that cartoon. And that was really cool, having Groot be the comedic sideshow, a relief. So I'm very excited about this one, especially with the fact that they're finally going into space, which is something we've never seen any Marvel movie franchise do before, with the exception of, the 5 minutes that Fantastic Four was into space?
Yeah, when they did that embarrassing Galactus shadow.
Right, the Galactus fart cloud.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy coming out, especially with all the people that got to it. You know, you're right, with Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Benicio Del Toro, Shimon Husu, Lee Pace, you know, Michael Rooker.
Karen Gillian.
It's all big names, you know, and Karen Gillian having shaved her head and revealed it at Comic-Con, which apparently everybody was pissed about.
Which I don't understand. She looks still looks gorgeous. I don't care if she's bald or not. She's always my my favorite Doctor Who companion. I'm excited to see her in a non-Doctor Who, non-British production. I think this will be huge for her. But also, throw in for Guardians of the Galaxy, Glenn Close, John C. Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are big names to have as characters. We did get to see the Nova Corps armor on the exhibit hall floor, so we know Nova Corps has really been thought out, and Glenn Close is leading the Nova Corps, so that's going to be interesting. You know, and why do you have someone so big playing the leader of the Nova Corps if you're not going to involve them further?
Right.
So.
Could be the Annihilation Wave, who knows?
Yeah, so Marvel has a lot coming on. Get excited for it. That was really cool to see. And that was the Marvel Studios Disney side of it. I have more coming up on the other Marvel comics side of it shortly.
You know, real quick, though, I wanted to talk about, I'm excited to see Anthony Mackie's portrayal of the Falcon.
Yeah.
I want to see how that works out. And apparently audiences were given a special treat with the episode one of S.H.I.E.L.D. And apparently that went off fantastically. The reaction to that was overwhelming. So
yeah, there was a, I guess they screened the pilot at their Ballroom 20 panel, which was extremely anticipated, including people spending the night in line.
And then with the entire cast of X-Men Days of Futures Past showing up,
mm-hmm.
That had to have been a big thing too.
Yeah, the cool thing, that was what I wanted to expand on the other side of the Marvel Universe, we have all these movies that are, you know, Spider-Man is over at Sony, and then we have several movies over at 20th Century Fox. They're working on a Fantastic Four reboot. They did lose their Daredevil, but they still have a couple other characters they can be bringing in, and they're working on a huge, what sounds like a huge X-Men universe. We're going to have an X-Force movie.
Right.
Confirmed with five characters on the team. We're going to have a Deadpool movie, hopefully, especially with all the popularity he's been getting, and then we have this X-Men Days of Future Past. Like you were saying, the whole cast shows up. We haven't seen that since the Avengers assembled a couple years ago for the first Avengers movie. And to have the entire cast, 17 people on stage across the front, they ran out of room, and they had the whole cast sit out there for it. It was really cool. The part that I liked, though, was off-site for it. So the announcements were pretty basic. A lot of things we already knew. The movie takes place 10 years after X-Men First Class in their timeline, and then takes place 10 years after X-Men 3 in the other timeline.
Right.
Which is going to be an interesting window to see, especially X-Men 3 was made in modern day, so that's, you know, it's not the too distant future.
Especially having seen the Wolverine this past weekend and seeing the end credits scene.
Mm-hmm. No spoilers.
Oh, no. If you listen to the Midnight Movie Maniacs, there's spoilers all over the place.
That's why I haven't listened yet.
I recorded the end credits scene so that you guys could hear it. But
yeah.
One thing we may have glossed over is that it was recently announced that, and I can't remember which studio, but I believe it is Fox because they hold everything else. Fox and Disney have agreed to allow some crossovers.
Whoa.
So there's a possibility because, you know, Wolverine is a member of the Avengers.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is a member of the Avengers. So there's a good chance that we may see a little crossing over back and forth.
I'm sure Disney would love to get their hands on a Hugh Jackman contract.
Right. But Hugh Jackman is also done after Days of Futures Past. He's been playing the character for 13 years, 8 movies now.
Yeah.
So he said he wants to take a good couple years break so he can let his body relax.
Yeah. Not be well, one of the things that they talked about in the panel was, of course, announcing, or confirming, I guess, finally, that Peter Dinklage will be playing Trask.
Right.
And what was cool is off-site across the street at the Hard Rock Hotel, they actually had a Trask Industries booth outside where they had the Sentinel head that they're using from the movie on display for people to see. And they were handing out Trask hats. They were doing posters that says Fight the Mutants, Beware the Mutants, things like that, which were really cool. But one of the things that I found entertaining was I was waiting in a line at the Tin Fish Crusher for and the NBC entertainment booth or whatever they want to call those, and there were people actually protesting Trask Industries, saying that Magneto was right, Cyclops was right, running back and forth and giving people high fives. People who were in X-Men cosplay were coming up and giving dirty looks and posing with the head, and it was just a really cool way to kind of tease it on the outside for people who weren't necessarily going to Comic-Con. They could still see this head, and they were passing out posters and just participating with fans, which was really cool. So you can see there's going to probably be a really good marketing campaign for the opposite side of the X-Men, you know, for the Trask industry side of it.
Well, you know, they did the same thing when the first X-Men movie came out, promoting what's-his-name being the president or what have you. I can't remember. I'm so old.
I didn't hear about that.
But, yeah, I had bumper stickers and all that stuff promoting those characters.
Wow.
So it was kind of cool. And yeah. And you're right in the fact that everybody's getting into character and doing this hardcore promotion, which is something that we've never really seen before.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see that. You know, it's a catch-22. On one side, it's awesome to see all this geek stuff and to be actually interactive and be a part of it and stuff. At the same time, it's also very, well, I'm 40. Where the hell were you when I was 18? This would have been a little bit better, you know, 22 years ago. But holy crap, I was 22 years ago.
To add on to it, one of the other announcements they made in terms of X-Men Days of Future Past, and always one of my favorite parts of superhero movies as we've seen for the last decade or so, is the partnership with other companies. Carl's Jr. will be teaming up with X-Men Days of Future Past to release a few items on their menu, not to mention the kids' meal toys and things like that for the movie. But they're going to have a Sentinel burger. That's one of the ones they've already announced. And they're going to have they have a secret identity for one of their X-Men themed burgers, which should be pretty cool that we'll see coming out soon to help promote the movie. I'm always a big fan when they do that kind of stuff. They did Carl's Jr. did a really cool Superman hamburger with the Superman cups and Superman toys and the kids' meal.
They did a Wolverine burger recently too.
Yeah, and Red Robin actually did a Wolverine burger
too. Yeah,
that's
what it was.
Still get to the end of the month, but 7-Eleven has kind of backed away from promotions like this. They did the original X-Men movie. I still have a lot of the cups and the little chips they gave with those. And so it's cool to see some of these restaurants and stores getting back into it. And I hope, like we saw with Walmart did with Man of Steel, just huge promotion, all kinds of toys specially produced, all kinds of events happening at the store and stuff like that. We will see more of this as time goes on with all these superhero movies coming out.
Now, the one thing that I am having a small problem with when it comes to Days of Futures Past is the story. They released a little thing real quick that Kitty Pryde will send Wolverine's modern-day consciousness back into his own bodies in the 70s, where he must warn the younger versions of the pair what to come. I wasn't too thrilled with that. However, Bishop.
Yeah.
Bishop has to be the big news that came out of that. We've all been waiting for Bishop to show up. Hopefully he doesn't take a back seat like Colossus did in the X-Men movies. Apparently even Colossus is going to get a bigger screen time, considering that the actor portraying him is the actor that also portrayed Master Chief in the fan film that recently came out. So, two things I'm really excited for. However, the storyline I'm a little iffy about.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes with the storyline. I was interested in the idea that it wasn't Kitty Pryde coming back and the way they originally portrayed it. I thought, you know, it was going to be two Wolverines seeing each other, especially after we saw Wolverine in X-Men First Class with that funny cameo, which was great, in my opinion. It was equal to the Thor-Hulk joke in Avengers. But it's one of those things where it'll be interesting to see the consciousness sent back in time.
Yeah, that's a little bit odd. And how would Kitty Pryde do that? She doesn't have that power ability.
The other thing that's getting to me, because I've been watching him in preparation to go see the new Wolverine movie, is tying in X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, tying in the original X-Men movies 1, 2, and 3, and putting X-Men First Class together. In X-Men Origins Wolverine, Patrick Stewart was walking off a helicopter. I'm sure they can play that off as, you know, Magneto was helping lift him. But in that movie, Emma Frost was in the jail cell.
Mm-hmm.
But
a little
in
girl.
Days of Future Past, she's a grown woman. And things like that. There's just all these little tiny bits that it's going to be hard for me as a nitpicker to see that kind of stuff.
Well, unless they pull that whole Magneto thing where in the comic books, Magneto was reversed aged and turned into an infant and had to grow up all over again. Yeah. So they could pull that, but... You know, real quick, though, we're getting a little long on this segment. Why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we can continue this discussion.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbuzz.com.
And we're back. Are your ears ready? So it's been a Comic-Con heavy reporting, but it seems like there was just so much news coming out of the show this year.
Yeah, with everybody, you know, all the stories, that's one thing that we've been trying to hold off on was talking about Comic-Con on the website, only because we wanted to be able to do the show and give you our actual opinions. The fact that we were on the floor, and everybody seemed to be all gung-ho about Comic-Con, but we seem to be the only company or group of guys that have issues with it.
Yeah.
But
we're not the ones that have issues with the lines, but we are one of the few that I think just the overall showed it all together. But, yeah, most of this news, it was easier to watch it on my phone.
Right.
The rebroadcasted panels and all that kind of stuff. So.
And like I said, I was only down there for preview night, but it seemed, you know, I was reading all the news as it was coming through the wire, and I felt better just reading about the news than actually being on the floor, because that floor was a nightmare.
Yeah.
But continue on. Let's talk about some of those stories. One of the big things that came out was the World of Warcraft. There was a proof of concept style teaser that was released for the live action version that showed a knight standing on a green ski desert. As a storm came in and a knight pulls out his sword, it takes a shield from a skeleton and prepares to fight a giant orc with a battle axe. I'm kind of excited. I'm not a big World of Warcraft fan, but I am a big fantasy fan, so I kind of want to check this out.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're going to actually give it the treatment that it needs to be brought to live action.
I do plan on watching Dungeons & Dragons before we go see this movie, though, just so I can be utterly disappointed and have something bad to compare it to. But then the Godzilla announcement. You were actually there you went on to the exhibit, correct?
Yeah, I headed out to the off-site exhibit, which was really cool. They had fans, you had to have a badge, and you had to get onto their website. They had their little Tumblr going that tracked Godzilla coming from Japan over to San Diego for a week or so, and then on the last over the course of all those articles, there was a little password that was in there, and that password actually got you into reserve a time to go into the Godzilla exhibit. And it was this really cool off-site warehouse that they rented. They painted the entire outside like Godzilla had attacked the building. On the inside, it was Godzilla props from the original Godzilla movie. One of the puppets that they used, the large puppets, the original weapon that was used to fight Godzilla. And then the funny thing was, it was like a street in Japan that they built, like an alleyway. And there was a little sushi bar where they were handing out little samples. And then on the other side were stores where they were selling Godzilla merchandise from the years and years and years of celebrating Godzilla. So all kinds of toys and things like that. And then a little video rental store which had every Godzilla movie in it ever made, except for Matthew Broderick's Godzilla back in the late 90s. That was nowhere to be seen anywhere in the building. But it was kind of cool to just see all the covers from the DVDs and videos over the years. And then all of a sudden this alarm goes off. And this guy comes out in a suit and says, "Hey, we need everybody to evacuate the area, evacuate the area. We've got some kind of anomaly happening. Please come in to our secure laboratory," which was in a skyscraper, and didn't feel that secure. But it was funny, they take you into the next room and you're in this science lab, and it shows you all these tracking computers, and they're tracking some sort of large object traveling across the ocean and heading for San Diego. From there, they say, "Okay, we have to evacuate. We're going to evacuate to the top of the building, the helicopter, pick you up, yada, yada. Get you into this next room," which is a makeshift elevator that, of course, breaks down, you know, halfway to the roof or whatever. And so they get us off the elevator, let us out onto the floor, and just tell us to find a place to hide and stay away from the windows. And this is where they debuted the first image of the brand new Godzilla, and he's walking through the skyscrapers of the town. It looks like New York. I don't think they comprehended that they were telling us it was coming to San Diego, and then they showed us New York buildings, but whatever, it was still cool. It was cool. They show Godzilla walk by. They show his tail taking out a whole floor of the building across the way, and then like, okay, I think he didn't see us. He's gone by. And then all of a sudden, Godzilla's head rises up and is looking right in, and he's about to fire us with his atomic breath. It was really cool. Didn't know what to expect when I saw Godzilla. I of course have seen the older movies where it's a guy in a suit kind of thing. Those always looked cool to me. And then I saw the Matthew Broderick version where I don't even know how to explain it. Jurassic Park crossed with Godzilla, I guess, the scales on the back and all that kind of stuff. This guy, this new one, looks a lot like the original. Great face, carries on the reptilian look. I think the atomic breath is going to play out very well. The eyes are creepy. Everything about it, the size looked great. And it was just really cool, really exciting thing. And then they take the whole group of people out, and they're like, thanks, we're glad we were able to get you out safely. And they walk you out the door, and they handed you a mini version of the recently released Mondo poster of it's the rubble piled up into the shape of Godzilla. So that was kind of cool to get that, too. And then they usher you out the door.
Nice.
It was a cool experience. It was something that was off-site, required a badge to get into, and a reservation. Went smoothly and looked cool.
Yeah, I grew up watching Godzilla. I'm half Asian, so it was Godzilla and Bruce Lee in our house. So you know, I'm a big fan of Godzilla, which is one of the reasons why I loved Pacific Rim so much. Just, you know, the way it took me back. But even the crappy Matthew Broderick version, I still rewatch every now and then just because it's Godzilla, and you know, I just love it. So I'm very excited for this new movie to come out with everything that they've been doing with it. They did mention a lot of post-production work that needs to happen, which makes a lot of sense. Apparently some of the footage that they'd screened at Con was, it showed it a flooded city and soldiers running around battling a giant multi-limbed insect monster, and Godzilla's foot comes into frame and he dwarfs the other creature and starts to attack it, very similar to Godzilla versus Bambi. Again, very, very excited for the movie. Another thing that was shown was the new 300, Rise of the Empire.
Yep.
I don't know, love the first movie. I'm sure I'll love the second. I'm sure after a while I'm going to hate the color green. But, you know, whatever. I'll deal with it.
It looks intense already, just from the original trailer we saw, from the footage that's been shared, from the posters. I'm still, I don't know, I thought it was going to be a prequel. I was surprised to find out it's a sequel.
Well, it's not, apparently my understanding was it's kind of a side story.
Yeah.
That happens at the same time, but like, you know, it takes a beat afterwards.
Right.
So.
And Lena Headey's back, who, you know, Mama can do whatever she wants, and I'm a fan.
Right.
I mean, I know The Purge sucked, but I still like her. And so it's cool to see her back in it, and hopefully it will do well.
Yeah. Plenty of other news that came out from Comic-Con. I'm sure you guys can head out into the websites and check them out. But unless you had anything else, I think we're done with Comic-Con coverage.
No, I think that can be it. I have a lot of ranting about Comic-Con, and just it's time for a change there. We really do need to do something about the crowds, the people who camped out in line on Friday night and Saturday night for panels the next day, which pretty much, if you didn't camp out, you didn't get into Hall H. So I didn't go to any panels in Hall H or Ballroom 20 this year, just because I didn't want to waste my comfy hotel bed for a couple hours of sleep to just go get back in line.
Well, and let's talk about something that's been a slow build-up in the past few years, but really took shape at this year's Comic-Con, and that is the complete and utter disrespect for the professional industry. The fact that, okay, first off, you know, as a pro, it was nice to get our badges in a quick and organized manner. And then they put us into a professional line, which is separate from the other line upstairs. However, right. The fact that we were treated like idiotic children by the staff,
right.
I had a problem with it. At some point in time, Comic-Con staff needs to realize that Comic-Con does not happen without professionals. We are the ones that create, write, and promote our comic books, and we are the reason why fans are coming there to spend all that money. So why treat us like we're pariahs and leopards and just disrespect us in that manner? You had mentioned that you couldn't even purchase anything.
Right. Now, in difference to your professional badge, I was also a professional. I was what was called a trade professional. So I didn't get a free badge. I actually had to pay for my professional badge. So I still got the perks of a professional, but I was a paid person who paid just as much money as everyone else who got a 4-day preview night pass.
Which in its own is kind of retarded, because if you're a trade professional, that means you
while you may not create, you have some sort of work in the production of comic books.
Right.
And so
I think
you should get a pre-badge as well, because without, sure, I may have written the comic book, but without your help, the book would not be out there. So how does that make any sense to make you pay for it when you do just as much work as we do?
Well, and this was one of the things I learned about the trade professional. Trade professional also included people who sell Comic-Con style or Comic-Con related items. So retailers could also get these trade professional badges and things like that. And that is why I waited in the Mattel line for my friend to get a couple action figures, and they wouldn't let me purchase them because I was a professional. Well, since retailers could also have it, professionals weren't allowed to have it, and it was just kind of, it's disrespectful. If you really want to, like you were saying, treat professionals better, you want to lump retailers in somewhere, sell a retailer's badge.
Right.
It's not that hard.
Right. I mean, these guys, these retailers, granted, they sell our books. They promote our books. They get it out there. They sell these products and stuff, and that's great. But, however, if you're going to give them special privileges more than a professional, then you should make them maybe pay a little bit more and give them a good half-hour window before the con opens so they can get in there and do all their shopping and purchasing. Because obviously they're doing that and placing orders so they can restock their stores to sell more of our product. So it only makes sense that they should get their own separate badge system and maybe a little bigger window to shop at. However, it makes no sense for them to turn away customers. Whether I'm a professional or not, I'm there to spend some money and buy some product. Why turn me away? Why say I'm not allowed to spend my money with you? That's retarded.
Right.
I mean, the same with you. You're there to buy something. You're spending money. It's not like you're getting a discount on the items that you're purchasing. It's not like you're getting an extra spot in line or cuts or anything. It's not Disneyland.
Nope.
You know, you're not getting that, you know, park hopper or line jumper privilege. You're there to spend money and wait in line just like everybody else, so why turn away your money? Why waste your time?
And for us to be let into the floor first was really cool. They did let us in on preview night, and that's great. Professionals, you know, we can go do the preview night. It was convenient. It would have been nice if we would have bought everything, because then for the rest of the weekend, we are out doing other things at the con. We can't spend time on the floor. We can't stand in line for 4 hours, 5 hours to get into a panel. We can stand in line for 6 hours to get an action figure or a toy. It would have been nice to get them out of the way first.
Right.
The
but
other
at the
thing
same time,
was,
why let us in early if we can't spend any fucking money?
Exactly. The other thing was, it didn't matter that they let us in first, because the exhibitors and the exhibitors' friends who had passes were all allowed to get into the lines before they let anybody into the preview night. And the lines were already capped by the time the professionals got in. So when the fans got in, fans couldn't even get in line.
Right.
So it's a whole big mess. I mean, you know, I know exhibitors want stuff. I know retailers want stuff. I know professionals. And then especially the fans want things. But if you're going to have such a big issue with it, maybe it's time we open a retail hall where we go down and that's where we sell the big, you know, that's where the Hasbro store is. Mm-hmm. That's where the Mattel store is. They still have two booths. They both have a display booth and a store booth.
But that store booth needs to be located off-site.
Right.
You know,
and then
make a contract with these hotels that are doing other events in their lobbies or something, and just have mm-hmm. that be where Hasbro goes to sell, where Mattel goes to sell. And also, why am I going to the Hasbro booth and looking at all these awesome toys that I want and them not being for sale at the store?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I saw the entire new Transformers line out there, all these dioramas for it, and I'm ready to buy them. I'm okay, cool. I can't buy them. They don't sell them here. Then why'd you show them to me? That's just a cock tease. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a big mess. And then the fact that so many people were fighting in lines for the Hasbro, the Mattel, and a couple other purchase booths, there was no swag being handed out preview night. There was nothing like that. There was nothing special about preview night, just crowds who wanted to try and buy stuff early, and most of the people were turned away. And so that was unfortunate. After that, I was a little disappointed. I went outside, I was going to go get in line I was going to go and check out some off-site stuff, and that was fun. But then the rest of the con, the next morning, Thursday morning, got up early to go get in line. Hall H had been capped at like 5 a.m. because there were so many people already in the line. And then the line to get into the actual convention center for people who still needed to register, who wanted to go to Ballroom 20 and the other meeting rooms and the exhibit hall floor, wrapped all the way along the front of the convention center, U-turned and all the way back down the sidewalk towards the convention hotel. It was almost 2 hours, people were saying, just to get in the doors of the convention center and then split into their lines. And then get around and have to wait for the exhibit hall to open for another 3 hours.
Which, again, is also hypocritical of them, because they had posted online, they had made a big announcement that you cannot get in line for Hall H until 6:30 that morning.
Yeah.
You can spend the night, you can do anything. And they made very, very specific adjustments to their line setup to where you couldn't fit a chair in there or camp out or anything like that. But then they're letting people get in line anyway.
Yeah, people camped out, people brought sleeping bags, people had chairs. For Saturday's panel and Sunday morning panel in Hall H, people started camping out the night before at 5 o'clock. They started a line, an official line, at 5 o'clock the night before. I don't know, you know, about everybody else, but I paid a couple $100 easily, actually a little bit more, for my hotel room so that I could stay close by the convention center and get in line first thing in the morning and not have to worry about, you know, getting on a shuttle and traveling a far way to get down there. It was disappointing that I couldn't even get in. So I didn't. I decided to walk around and did the exhibit hall floor every day. I did smaller panels, and I walked on the off-site events. And that was another thing. So it was amazing to see so many off-site events going on, and it's been growing the last couple of years. NerdHQ is in its third year, took over part of Padre Stadium and did a fantastic job with their display. It was really cool. Opened all day for everybody to come in and play arcade games, watch shows, take pictures. They had fans stopping by, and all proceeds from bar sales, from food sales, from their panel sales went to Operation Smile. And they had some of the top listers from Hall H over there. Tom Hiddleston did panels. Nathan Fillion did panels. Riddick did a panel. I mean, there was everything over there. It was really cool. They did a good job. And they weren't doing much in way of requiring a badge for people if you could just come from the public and come attend these events, which to me, I think that's where the downside is. When you're allowing the public to come and attend events like this, any of the offsite events, then you're adding an extra tens of thousands of people to the crowd that's already in San Diego. Some of us are trying to get fresh air from the convention center from the 100,000 people that are going there. It just makes downtown a really tough place to be. There were lines for everything, to get into everything except for the Godzilla encounter. Godzilla encounter required a badge. The Assassin's Creed pirate ship that they had in the back had a huge line down the marina every day, and it wasn't a quick process to go through. Same thing with the Fandango lobby that they did a photo booth where you would get a printout of three photos that were taken for you and then a free piece of candy that possibly had a golden ticket on it for a free movie. The lines got so long because these booth experiences were so involved. And then add the fact that it's not just attendees, but it's the public as well. I know it's a major marketing time of year, but if you're going to do Comic-Con and you're going to take over offsites, make this Comic-Con. You know, we pay $200 for a badge. We should be the ones enjoying these perks. And it's going to help alleviate crowds in the exhibit hall and the hotels nearby where they're hosting panels and things like that. But to just let the public walk up and do this, I think takes away from the Comic-Con experience. They really do need to they want to make San Diego a campus. That's what their directors have said. They want Comic-Con to be a campus. Well, if it's a campus, you should need a badge. You should need an ID to get into these events.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's great for people like let's say if my wife and I and my kids wanted to go down there, except I couldn't get them a badge. Well, now they have something to do outside while I am in the con sweating in hand dealing with that drama. But, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but it shouldn't be a part of that block. Maybe make it a couple blocks further up the gas lamp or something. Have it separate sites, you know, but not really all in that big clump. Because it is not fair to punish us who've, you know, purchased these badges and gotten these badges and are paying crazy amounts of money for hotel spaces to have to deal with this kind of stuff. But at the same time, to ostracize San Diego inhabitants who are being uprooted by having these problems going on, you know, it should give them something to do as well. But maybe not in that same, all in that same encompassing block.
Yeah.
Make it an entire town event, you know.
Well, they have two stadiums there.
Right.
And only parts of the stadium were being used during the weekend.
Yeah, let Petco do one thing for con attendees and let Qualcomm do something else for non-con attendees and non-badge holders. You know, have it be Anaheim.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the prices, the price gouging is getting out of control. I know you went to the Defiance Cafe by Sci-Fi.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but from what I remember about the ticket prices, they went up, or food prices, they went up again this year.
Yeah, I paid $18 for fries.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just getting out of control. There was parking for $50 for the day to park within the vicinity, not even near the convention center. They were way out from the convention center when we were taking the shuttle in. $50 to park.
Wow.
For the day to be able to walk around downtown.
Yeah, I fought tooth and nail to get over by the Petco Park and pay $20 to park there.
Yeah.
Which is very convenient for me to park there. It was pretty cool, actually.
Well, and that was Wednesday, right?
Yeah, that was Wednesday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Even Sunday, as we were leaving the con, they had $40 ticket prices for parking. I mean, just out of control. And then these hotels, you know, they're charging $300 a night for Comic-Con weekend. Their regular rates are nowhere near that. But their contracts with Comic-Con and to do the exclusivity in the contract, they are price-gouging fans, as well as people who do want to stay down there.
Right.
And it's just getting out of control. It's one of those things where Comic-Con's eventually going to just price itself out, and the only people who are going to attend are the rich kids who have nothing to do with Comic-Con, have no interest in it. There are these kids, like Coachella has had a lot of complaints about. The Coachella Festival became the cool place to be, and there are people who don't know half the bands that show up there. But they can afford the cost, they can afford the hotels nearby,
and they're just there to party.
And they spend the money, and they're just there to party, which is okay, that's cool, that's great. But it's also ruining the spirit and the theme of the show. And I think that's what's starting to happen with Comic-Con. There were a lot of people talking about, oh, I don't know, but I know what the movie he's in, but I know it's Tom Hiddleston, and I think he's cute. What? No, he's Loki and Thor. What are you talking about?
Right.
You know, and there's this, who's Nathan Fillion? Are you kidding me? You're at Comic-Con, you don't know who Nathan Fillion is. People who don't care about Star Wars, Disney people who don't care about anything that was going on there. They know it's a cool con. They know there's exclusives and there's free stuff. It's losing its appeal. And to me, I honestly feel like there are other shows that are up and coming. New York Comic-Con is not nearly as big as San Diego, but it is one of the biggest in North America. And that sounds more enticing to me. And for the same amount of money that I spend to stay in San Diego and attend that show, I could go to New York and attend that show.
I've been saying this for years, but WonderCon's my favorite.
Yeah, WonderCon has been growing by leaps and bounds every year for the last few years. And when they came down to Anaheim, they've been doing a great show. The interesting thing is that is Comic-Con in San Diego's sister show.
Yep.
How can they be doing this and still screwing up San Diego?
Because San Diego's out of the control. At some point, there's so much going on that they need to turn San Diego Comic-Con into a two-weekend event.
Something like that, yeah. Do what South by Southwest does. Take over the city and have all these events that you have to have a badge for to get in. You have to get separate side tickets to get in. You know, Hall H, sell a basic Comic-Con badge. And then if you want to attend panels in Hall H, you can pay $5 a ticket to attend the 10 a.m., 5 for the 11 a.m., and then you can buy an all-day pass. If you have an all-day pass, you can stay in the seats in the front, special saved section. You've got those. You can sit there all day.
And then have it catered. Have somebody rolling up saying, hey, I know you've been here for a couple hours. Do you want some food? I'll go get you some
right?
You know, something like that.
I mean, it's not that hard. It wouldn't take that much more. I know they can't get their ticketing shit down, but it's not that hard to do. Other shows do it. I've seen it for years, and they've been around a lot less than San Diego.
Hey, you know, at that point, you can host the different tickets on different servers. You can go to a different, you know, comiccon.pro.com. And that's where I get my pro badges from. You can go to regularattendee.com and get your badges there. Hall H or, you know, PanelCon website and go get your panels badges there. Make them separate websites so you're not getting over-flooded by this the amount of people that are purchasing tickets. And just make it simpler.
And it controls the number of people who are in line because only the people who have tickets can get in. There's not going to be any like, huge overnight line.
Right.
No one has to line up at 5 o'clock the night before. And, you know, yeah, it's going to sell out quick, just like the regular Comic-Con badges do, but that's the game of buying the tickets online. And that, you know, yeah, we're going to see complaints, but still, that I think is the better way. That's the way we're going to fix Hall H and Ballroom 20 issues.
I think the only way, the way that I see in fixing it is I'm just not going to go.
Yeah. With that, rant over.
The rant is over.
Drop the microphone, walk away.
So yeah, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some reviews and some things that we've read, as well as a little bit of news that isn't Comic-Con related. So we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art.
And welcome back, everybody. All right, so in this segment, like I said, we're going to be going over some of the stuff that we had read and some other basic news that's not Comic-Con related. First off, I know, Martin, you haven't seen the Wolverine yet. But I did, and I wanted to talk real quick about it. You can go to the Midnight Movie Maniacs and check out that podcast that we did. But I've actually had a couple days since then to sit there and think about it. And I just wanted to say that I thought the movie was awesome. Couple little things I didn't like about it. Silver Samurai wasn't too impressed with why he was in the story at all. But other than that, I was really impressed with it. I really thought it did a good job of kind of boosting itself past what the first Wolverine movie did, the silliness and the crappiness of it. They really brought their A-game on this one, and I think with a couple more fine-tuning, they could have had an exceptional film, and I was really happy about it. I was worried going in about the PG-13 rating that it got, and also the lack of blood that they had talked about, and leaving about 12 minutes on the floor of editing out of it, but I really didn't notice it. Once you get into it, once the action starts, once everything was going, you really don't notice it, that it wasn't as violent or bloody as it could have been. So I just wanted to say that. I thought it was a great movie. A cool movie, anyway. And the fact that the after-credit scene, I really, really liked that. And if you haven't seen it yet, you should go head out and check it out. If anything, just for the after-credit scene. It does a really good job of leading into X-Men Days of Futures Past. So, yeah. There's that.
There's a lot of excitement about it, and I'm really hoping it takes the number one spot this weekend over some of these past films that we've seen. You know, last weekend we had 4 movies come out on a Friday, which was just ridiculous, and of course none of them make it into the top spot, so that's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, I was really disappointed that RIPD did not do a lot better than it has been.
Yeah, so it's good to see a superhero movie getting a lot of news and a lot of coverage, and hopefully it will deliver.
One of the other movies that is being adapted, one of the news pieces I wanted to talk about, was that Dead Space, the film adaptation, is being revived.
That's all you can say, or you're just too excited to talk about it?
All I can say, I'm excited about the movie. I know it's a big horror, space horror franchise, and for the love of God, I need some science fiction in my life.
Some real science fiction.
Yeah, the lack of space movies that have been out there, you know, Star Trek did a great job, but it was mostly on Earth. Yeah, you know, Pacific Rim did a great sci-fi job, but again, on Earth. I'd really like to see something out there, a Star Wars, a better Star Trek, something like that. So Dead Space would be great. I know Elysium is coming out soon, but again, that's on Earth. I want to see something in outer space, and I've been missing that in my life, and I just want more of it. So hearing about the Dead Space adaptation coming out, as well as the fact that it's horror-related, I'm very excited about it. They tried to do it a couple years ago. I can't even remember the name of the movie, but with Dennis Quaid, spaceship gets... Anyway, I liked that movie, but this one I'm hopeful for, so we'll see what goes from there. Another bit that's been in the news is Mr. Robert Kirkman.
Yep.
Recently, he's got a series out right now called Clone, which I'm a big fan of. But apparently they're getting an adaptation to come to TV. Universal Television is developing a TV series from creator Robert Kirkman's sci-fi thriller Clone. This is from Dark Horizons. David Schulner, who's been writing for the comic book for the over past years, is penning the adaptation. The storyline, quote, is as this: what if there were more of you? And what if you could save those versions of yourself from being killed? The show's themes of identity and nature versus nurture are intrinsic in the roller coaster ride of a story. However, they have one already. It's called Black... I can't remember the name. I'm zoning on the names today, guys. My bad. But they already have a clone show out, and it's a fantastic show. So why do this one? Why bring it out there? Is it because Robert Kirkman's name is attached to it? And with the press that The Walking Dead is getting and the acclaim that it's getting, that they're hoping just having his name attached to it will bring success? Well, they tried that before with Reaper. Kevin Smith's name was attached to it. It did a great first episode and then tanked immediately afterwards. So how are they thinking, hoping that Robert Kirkman's clone is going to do the same? I don't know. And all these comic book stories and shows that are coming to TV, I have concerns about, because you can't show the violence and the attitude that a lot of these comic books have on regular TV. They need to go Stars, HBO, Cinemax, stuff like that. Something I've been saying forever now. So I don't know how Clone, which is action-packed, bloody, violent, and just vulgar, how it's going to get adapted onto TV as well. Just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. But we'll see how that goes. And that's kind of all the reviews I had, or news I had. I did want to talk with Martin. Martin and I are going to get into a little argument here. I'm going to pick a fight. I did read in preparation. Well, first off, let's go into something that I'm sure we can both agree on. I watched Justice League: The Flashpoint Paradox recently, based off of DC comic book of the same name, and loved it. I just absolutely loved it. I had an issue with some of the art style.
Okay.
But I did like the story, and, Grifter got an arrow in his dome. Dude, that was awesome.
Yeah. And the bullet through the head, spoiler alert, a little bit there. But, there was just some intense violence in this animated feature, which is awesome. It is really cool to be seeing Warner Brothers and DC push these films a little bit further beyond just being a Saturday morning cartoon into a fan movie.
And
that was really cool.
This had to have been one of the most action-packed and violent DC movies I have ever seen. And loved every second of it. There was a couple of slow points in there, but that's fine. Thomas Wayne, dude. The first time you see Batman on screen. Okay, let's just say this real quick. If you don't want to know anything about this, you should probably skip ahead to the next section, because I'm going to get spoiler heavy here. I haven't had a chance to geek out with a friend about this since I've seen it, so me and Martin are going to geek out for a second here. Thomas Wayne showing up on screen and just shooting fucking yo-yo like crazy.
Yeah.
With guns and throwing down. That was awesome. I briefly talked to Richard about this. Thomas Wayne is an awesome Batman. And I thought he did a fantastic job with it. Even to the point where there was almost got teary at the end when he got the letter.
Which, in the comic book, you and I talked about this when the comic book came out. That scene of Bruce Wayne receiving, I'm getting goosebumps right now talking about it, of him receiving a letter from an alternate universe where his dad was alive and he was dead. Like, it's just, whoa. Like, there were people in the audience wiping away tears.
Right.
And, to see that in an animated movie about comic book superheroes where we just saw somebody get shot through the head and people were wiping away tears, it was awesome.
Right.
I was very excited about this movie from the time they announced it, because I always thought that it would be a great jumping point for them, for DC, to do a live-action Justice League movie, because I followed Flashpoint, and I followed the way the series turned into the New 52 and how it created the new universe and et cetera. I just always thought this was a great jumping point for them. So I've been waiting for this movie ever since they announced it, and it was cool to see just the impact. I mean, there are people in the audience who hadn't seen an animated feature before talking about how awesome it was. That being said, that drawing sucked.
Right, the animation, the art style was crap. I mean, how big did Aquaman really need to be?
Seriously.
Like, that was
ridiculous.
And the
eyes were all off on everybody. You can tell they went out of the company to go have this made. And unfortunately, it's also part of the next movie.
Yeah.
One of the things to tell fans, if you are listening and haven't seen it yet, sorry for the spoilers, A. B, there's an after credit scene or an end credit scene to check out.
Yeah.
So, totally cool to see him going this direction. And then to find out what they're coming up with next. They announced this at the Comic-Con panel. They're going to be doing Justice League War, which will be interesting, and I'm sure this will help you with your next fight you want to pick.
Yes.
It should be cool. It's going to come straight out of the Flashpoint Paradox. So obviously we're going to see a lot of the new DC 52 origins and looks. So that will be cool in early 2014. We're going to see Son of Batman, which was a cool Batman story. I don't know how they're going to take on this. They haven't said much about it, just the title. But it would be cool if they really did adapt closely to the book. And then finally, Assault on Arkham, which if you've been following the Arkham games, the video games from Rocksteady, and the new one coming out later this year, they've been awesome. Arkham is a very popular landscape right now, and there's so many characters that can tie into it and they can bring into it. I just, for the love of God, please hire actual comic book animators.
Yeah, the past two DC movies I've seen have just been horrible as far as animation style. I can't remember what the other one was. It was so anime that I got bored and turned it off.
Well, the one before this, that was Superman Unbound, right?
No, it wasn't.
That's
Superman.
The one. No, Lego.
It was
Superman.
Iron Man. That's what I was thinking about.
Batman.
I was thinking
Iron Man.
Yeah, Iron Man Technovore or whatever. That was crap.
Well, Marvel and DC have both announced and over the past 2 years talked about they've gone to anime studios to have these movies drawn. And I just don't understand it. Why? I mean, is it cheaper?
It's cheaper, and B, it doesn't take the artists away from working on their books.
Oh, okay. I see. That's a good point.
So that's why they're going, you know, they're farming it out, basically, to anime style. And I'm sorry, but I don't like it.
No, that doesn't look right.
If it wasn't for the story, I would have turned Flashpoint off. But the story and the action, the characters got me involved that eventually I ignored the animation, as bad as it was. But let's jump forward here. I've started reading Justice League 52 because of Flashpoint. Like, I had no involvement, I didn't care about it otherwise. Batman being my favorite character in DC, that's all I've been reading up until after the Talon storyline. But so I started reading Justice League 52, and first off, the first is six issues, which is what the animated movie will be based on War. What the fuck was that? I mean, it was Jim Lee and Geoff Johns both working on the book, which means you got Transformers IMAX 3D. There was so much going on, so much heavy art style and story, and it was just a clusterfuck to me. I appreciated the story and what it was trying to do, and that was cool, but, I mean, what we saw Darkseid for 5 pages, you know, and then otherwise it was so pretty that it was hard to focus on what the story was about. And
personally love those books, and this is where, Justice League is probably of the start. I think that was one of the greatest starts, and I think that is a Justice League live-action movie in and of itself. I think the story takes a little long to play out over those six books, but the relationships between the heroes and how they form the team and all of that was just, it worked for me, and I laughed a lot while I was reading that book, and I enjoyed that. I liked that was how Green Lantern and Flash and Batman meet, and then, you know, Superman's this alien in Metropolis that they all have to go and try and recruit and things like that. I just loved that, and I don't know. Yeah, everybody I talk to, that's the book I try and sell them on for New 52.
Well, see, I kind of dug the story. I thought it was cool, except for Cyborg. I thought he was just, really? Like, you just got this, and 10 seconds later, you're just thrown down in a fight? Like, I didn't feel that. What I did like about it were the Shazam side stories at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that was more coherent and linear than anything else in the book. Especially starting at issue 7, where it just becomes incoherent. Issue 7, if you hadn't read any of the other DC 52 books, you're lost. Because it talks about all these other things that they've been doing. And it continues on until about issue 13, which is where I had to stop because I couldn't do it anymore. You know, it feels like you're picking up. You're like, you've missed out on all these other episodes that you should have been watching or being involved with. And then you come into this and you're like, okay, what happened? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't even tie up at the end of the issue. It just goes on to what feels like other side issues that you should have been reading in the meantime. This is some of the problems that I've been having with Marvel and DC, in that if, let's say, for example, Crisis. You know, if you're reading Crisis,
well, I've got to read all the other stories in the meantime to find out why these superheroes are behaving like this in the main story. And I don't like that. If I'm reading a Justice League book, I want to find out what the Justice League has been doing as the Justice League. Not right. What Batman has been dealing with on the side, what Superman has been dealing with on the side, and how suddenly they need to call in the rest of the Justice League to help them wrap it up. But it doesn't even help wrap it up. It just leaves it open that you have to read the other side's issues to get what's going on. And I thought it was way too sloppy. It made me wonder, why would I pick up this book in the meantime? I don't need this to continue on the other storylines, except just to read the Shazam side story at the end, which I really dug. You know, seeing him in the orphanage and dealing with all that stuff, I thought that was really cool. But not in the comic book. It was a waste of time for me. Issue 1-6 was a coherent storyline, and I kind of dug it. But, you know, again, it felt like I'm watching Transformers in 3D on IMAX. So much going on that it's hard to focus on one thing. But after that, it was just a waste of time, and not really.
It was interesting in that whole DC 52, because I followed almost all of the books that first year, so all the way up through issue 13. After the sixth book, almost every story kind of seemed to falter off. It was like they put a lot of effort into those first six issues, and then that was kind of it. And then it's like, if you're in, you're in. If you're not, you're not.
Right. They used Jim Lee and Geoff Johns to bait the hook,
right,
to get everybody into it, and then they take them away after issue six, and they're like, deal with it.
Yeah. And they're trying, I think, now to get people back. Justice League 22 just came out. That's the most recent and only comic book I've read lately, and it's the start to the Trinity War. So we now officially have our first DC 52 universe crisis-like situation starting. And they've been tying it together, it sounds like now, since Flashpoint. So there was this character that kept appearing in Flashpoint, Pandora, and they brought her into the new 52, and she's a part of that too. And there's this war, this Trinity War, that's going to start, and kicks off with a superhero killing somebody, killing another superhero, and the Justice League and the Justice League of America are about to have like a civil war of sorts.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a big event. They're crossing it, though. It's not going to have its own book. It's going to be across several different books for 7 or 8 issues.
Justice League, Justice League of America, Justice League right. Dark, Constantine, Trinity of Sin, Pandora, and Trinity of Sin, the Phantom Stranger.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to see how they're trying to tell another epic story to start. And I can already tell you from this first issue, especially if you couldn't handle those first six with all the Transformers IMAX stuff, exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of action, and I think it's going to play out slowly again, which, you know, they did that in the first six Justice League issues. But I think for the next half a year or 3 months or whatever, we're going to see a big story again told like those first six issues, and then it's going to flounder out again.
I think they realized, because they've been canceling series left and right.
Oh, yeah.
And they're realizing, well, you know, maybe we need to have a tie-in. Maybe we need to have a reason why these people should read these independent issues. So let's do another, you know, crisis storyline.
Yeah. And then we're going to see Villains Month in September, where all the villains take over every DC 52 title. So that's going to be another marketing event with 3D covers. And I pre-ordered like 50 books for the rest of the year that have a 3D articulated cover featuring a villain.
Let's see, here's the problem. If your story, if your independent issues are not doing well enough to maintain publication, then get new writers.
Yeah.
You know, or get new artists something and just keep trying. This is ridiculous. I mean, they launched this new 52 as a way for new readers to get involved in the series without having to read all the backstories and know all the origins because they rebooted it. Cool. But now you're canceling them left and right, and it makes you wonder, well, why did you bother bringing them back in the first place? You know, DC is getting so convoluted and so diluted with everything that's going on that they need to do an image. They need to get rid of everybody and just have a core group of guys working on essential titles and rebuild the brand instead of what they did. It's freaking Marvel and Wolverine. How many Wolverine titles do we need? Seriously.
Yeah.
So now DC's doing the same. All these different titles going on when you haven't even rebuilt the fan base.
you've not given the fans a reason to come back and enjoy these characters yet, because you're just, you know, oh, hey, remember this guy? Yeah, fuck him. Remember this guy? Oh, yeah, fuck him. And, you know, so, and you started that off by bringing the Joker back in a storyline that didn't see anybody major die.
Right.
They waited 3 issues after the Joker's storyline was over before they killed Damian Wayne. What are you doing, DC? Come on, bring it back. It seems like all your focus is on the animated features and making your Marvel-style movies coming out that you're losing comic book readers. You know,
and that point right there, that's my question. Is it that they're more focused on writing a movie story or something that can be turned into a TV show rather than writing a comic book? Are we getting these overly cluttered stories and these, you know, so many pieces going on at the same time that they're just thinking, well, you know, it would actually make a really great movie, but we're going to make it a comic book anyways.
Right, and that's the Warner Brothers influence right there.
Yeah.
You know, make everything a visual media, something that they can get.
We need you to compete with Marvel, so can you, you know, up that level?
Right. Because, I mean, comic books will never bring in the millions and millions of dollars that a movie can bring in.
Yeah.
So instead of, they should be laying groundwork here. They should be building a strong foundation, and they're failing at that, in my opinion. Except for Batman. Batman's kicking ass left and right. So.
And Batman still had some off and on stories, too. That leading up to the death in the family, and next month is this month is actually Batman and Catwoman instead of Batman and Robin, and it's, even in Justice League, this issue 22 of Justice League with the start of the Trinity War, Batman and Catwoman are on opposite sides of the war, and they get, pun totally intended, catty with each other during the conversation that starts the war. And it was cheesy, it was stupid. I don't know where it was coming from, why they had to throw that in there. It, you know, maybe they needed a humorous point in the book to get rid of all the darkness, but it was just kind of lame. And I, you know, Batman's kind of been disappointing me lately. I was really excited the first year of Batman. I had a lot of fun with the Court of Owls. I liked the death in the family for the most part, minus the whole no big death. I cried when they killed Damian Wayne, like, you know, like, There's some good points there, but there's so much more they could be doing, and I just feel like they're not writing comic books to write comics. They're writing them to make a movie, and then, and a comic shop owner has told me this before, is, you know, a movie comes out, and then everybody comes in saying, hey, I just saw the Justice League War movie. Can I get the comic books?
Right.
And then they go buy those comic books, and it's like, you know, why would you write the comic first, make the movie, and then have people come back and buy the comic? It should be... They read the comic, they love the comic so much that you decide to make a movie.
Well, that's also what they're doing. So they write the comic book, which is what the movie is based off of, and so once they see the movie, they go and they buy the back issues of the comic book, and they continue buying the newer issues, only to be disappointed by the newer issues because it's nowhere near as good as the first ones. I mean, you say yourself, Court of Owls, what an awesome start to the Batman story. You know, what a great way to reboot it. And then they bring the Joker back, which was great publicly in the media, but it was not a great story. Then you kill Damian Wayne, and then now what the hell is he doing? Nothing.
Yep.
You know, it's...
He's letting a cow lick his face. Bat cow.
It makes no sense.
I'm not joking. Bat cow, people. So it's like, you know, I don't know. It's a little sad, but at the same time, I'm not going to stop reading. These are the comics I grew up on. I'm a fan of DC, and I want to see where they're going to go. I just hope they're taking it somewhere better.
Right.
And, you know, it's Superman's 75th anniversary. Let's see some fucking awesome Superman books, please. I don't care that he's dating Wonder Woman. I don't care that he's not wearing underwear on the outside. I want to see some epic Superman stories where he doesn't destroy the whole city, but he still has some action in it, and doesn't have to kill Zod. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. It really is. It's like Hollywood has taken over Comic-Con. Hollywood has taken over comic books. Let's get back to comic books. Let's be comic books again. This is why Image is doing so well. This is why Boom Studios, you know, can take another company, Archaea, and form the third biggest company. They're writing books that might occasionally get picked up for a TV show, but they don't give a shit if it actually gets produced. You know, they're still writing a comic book just to write a comic book, and that's really awesome. You've pointed out about Walking Dead and how it's changed a lot since it's become a TV show. The comic book has.
Yep.
And, you know, even that, like, it's a good comic book. It was a good story. Don't let it get diluted by Hollywood.
You know, I'm going to have to stop you right there. Looks like we're having a bit of technical difficulties. Martin and I are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. Hopefully clear up the technical difficulties. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Andrea from Andrea's Gaming Lounge. Make sure you take a look every day, several times a day, at ForbiddenPanel.com to check out all the greatest gaming news and reviews.
And we're back. Sorry about that. Martin was getting a little scratchy.
Well, I'm always a little scratchy, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's, yeah, you need to get a shot for that, buddy.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, not impressed with what DC is doing. And contrary to what I had said previously, Disney seems to be doing good with Marvel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hand over fist money.
Yeah, so, but at the same time, because of that, we saw a lack of a really big Marvel presence at Comic-Con, with them saving all of their, everything that they got for D23 coming up.
Which I don't think will be much more. I don't know what further they could show us. You know, Hall H panel, we got the Age of Ultron news. We saw a lot of, there was footage released for Guardians of the Galaxy. We heard about Thor 2 and Captain America 2. The things that I wanted to see more presence of, besides them handing out concept art posters and displaying the armor of every movie, was I wanted to see more booth activities.
Yeah, and that's what I mean in the way of D23 bringing more of a Marvel game than Comic-Con did, is because there was no booth presence. I mean, you had, right, you know, the picture that you could have taken up on the stage like everybody else does, but there's nothing else out there. There was nobody signing. There's no books for sale. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah, they cared more about, they had these weird, like, glasses and shirts and things. They actually had a Marvel store this year, which was a little bit different, and that was okay. It wasn't nothing spectacular. But D23, the first time around, they had just gotten this Marvel deal closed up, so maybe this is why. But they had no exhibit hall presence whatsoever for Marvel. It was all Disney all the time, and they had at least a third of their exhibit hall empty for Disney. And so I thought that was really surprising. I totally would have a Star Wars exhibit coming up for this one this year. I would have a Marvel exhibit in addition to hosting separately from their overall four-hour movie panel that they did last year, where they showed Avengers for 5 minutes at the very end. Thank you very much, Disney, for letting me sit through that. They need to have their own separate panels. They need to have times where it's just Marvel, just Star Wars, just Disney movies, just Pixar movies. I think that would be fantastic. I think that would be really cool. You know, let there be breaks. There were a lot of Disney fans who sat through for all the way to the Marvel panel, and they were like, what's Marvel doing here? So there's clearly Disney-ania fans that really didn't care about it, and there are Marvel fans who were there who didn't get in. Because there were Disney-ania fans taking up seats for a panel they didn't care about. So it'll be interesting to see how they change it up this year. They've had some time. The Star Wars deal closed long enough ago that we should at least have some sort of Star Wars presence. And there has been enough work going on pre-production for the new Star Wars movie that we better have some sort of announcement. Casting, something more than John Williams is going to score the movie, because if you had doubts in that, I don't know what's wrong with you.
And something other than the fact that the entire Star Wars original cast is out at the gym right now.
Yeah, seriously, if that's what you want to talk about, you want to bring the original cast out on stage looking good and ready to take their roles on, cool. Really cool. But give me something more. Confirm for me that Zac Efron will not be in this movie.
Or Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling, I could go one way or the other with him. He's got potential, but I think it's the wrong move for him and for his personality. But, you know, do something. Bring something there for us that'll be really cool. And then, you know, definitely talk about the new Star Wars animated show that's going to be coming out, Rebels, and show us a little bit about that, if not an episode, and things like that. You know, yes, it's a Disney convention, but let's make Marvel and Star Wars a part of it, since it is part of the Disney family now. And I will be there on the floor, so I will be able to rant afterwards about D23.
Orphan Black, that's the name of the show. Sorry, totally off subject. Orphan Black is the name of the clone TV show that's already out there. We had discussed in the previous segment of the show.
So yeah. Go rewind and listen to that part and then come back.
Right, and think Orphan Black. That's what he's talking about. But yeah, I will not be at D23. However, I do want to see some photos and excited about what may be displayed there. One of these days I'll get out there. But
it's interesting that it's an every other year convention. I think that's really cool. And it builds up a lot for them. And I'm willing to pay $150 for a 3-day pass that's for something this big. I just hope that this year, you know, this is their third one. They've only held three. And Disney has been growing and learning with it at the Anaheim Convention Center, which we saw amazing things done at WonderCon with. So let's see what Disney can do with it now, since they pretty much own that town anyway.
Right. Much to Anaheim's chagrin.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, moving on, I did want to talk about one of the books I had read recently.
A comic book?
A comic book. Imagine
you are kidding me. A comic book.
A few years ago, I started reading Northlanders. It's a book written by Brian Wood. And I believe that I even talked about it here on the show. Well, recently, I decided to wrap up on it, and because the series had ended, and I wanted to read it and actually finish it out and see what I thought of it. Brian Wood, you may have remembered Martin and I discussing how, you know, we cried over DMZ. It was
stupid DMZ.
It was he wrote and created DMZ, which is a fantastic book. It's one of my favorites. So I went into Northlanders thinking, you know, okay, well, Brian Wood, you know, I trust you. And yeah, dude, he reaffirmed my trust just in the first eight issue run. Northlanders is the quick wiki definition. It's an American comic book series published by DC Comics under their Vertigo imprint. The stories are fictional, but set in and around historical events during the Viking Age. What's great about this book is that there's no characters that you follow. It's just different short stories all over the place. So you can literally pick up, you know, book 2 and be okay. You can pick up book 8 and not have missed anything because they're just short, self-contained stories. So it's pretty awesome. The only character that you ever see spanning any time frame or any length of time in any of the stories is a character called Sven. But that's only because, like, the first 8 issues is about who Sven is. Then, like, I don't know, a couple books later, he shows up again, and then a couple books later, he wraps up the storyline. But for the most part, you don't have to. I posted this on Facebook the other day. Northlanders, Brian Wood takes everything I loved about his writing style and how involved you can get into the characters from DMZ, put some Vikings around it, and made it really, really bloody and awesome, and gave me Northlanders. And that's what I love. I can totally see Northlanders being a TV show, being a movie, but it needs to be more of a TV show than a movie. But yeah, it's fantastic. And the fact that each story arc is a different artist allows you to get to see different ways of expressions, different styles. And yeah, I can't say enough wonderful things about Northlanders. It saddens me that all of these great books that Brian Wood puts out that I love keeps getting canceled. DMZ, Northlanders, and it makes no sense to me. But I love them all the same. So if you have a chance, the series is over. Go pick it up. It's fantastic. You will not regret it.
So you think I'm going to fall for this again,
yeah.
And then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to start crying on the next episode, and there will be hell to pay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm worried about your health today.
I don't know if I'm going to fall for this again. every time you recommend a book like this, I end up getting really involved in it and then so sad at the end. But maybe by individual stories, it won't be as tough.
Yeah, that's what's nice about it, because I don't want to say each issue. I'd say, like, you know, there's like an 8-issue arc or a 6-issue arc or a 3-issue arc. And there's every now and then he puts in, like, just a standalone story in there somewhere, you know, just a 1-issue arc. And, I don't know, I just dig it. I love it a lot. So much, in fact, that I started picking up his newest ongoing series called The Massive, as well as the Conan the Barbarian story that he's doing currently. I did not realize, however, that he's currently writing Ultimate Comic Books, Ultimate X-Men. So, yeah, that's kind of a nice surprise for me. But big fan of his from Global Frequency. He did DV8, Gods and Monsters. Yeah, I can't say enough about him.
He and almost everything of his that you've recommended or of his that I've come across, I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
It's sad to see, like you were saying, that so many of his books come to an end. But at the same time, it's always cool to go and see him move on to something new.
Well, I think it's because, I mean, his writing style is so different than what you've normally seen. He's very grounded in reality writing style and very drama, character-driven stories. So I think when people aren't used to that, they're not ready for that realism. You know, DMZ was a very real book, you know. Same with Northlanders. It's great that he's writing things about something that's already happened, Viking lore and stuff like that. And he does his research. He's the Alan Moore of research, you know. So it's, I think just some people just aren't ready for that. They go into comic books and they want X-Men violence and Superman and Batman and stuff like that. That when they come across a book like this, it's just not what they're expecting. And so unfortunately it fails. But hopefully, you know, the Massive so far, I've read 5 issues into it and it's got me. You know, I'm already addicted to it. So, and it's not even finished, which is like one of the very few things I hate doing is picking up one of his older stories that isn't finished because now I got to wait every month for the next issue to come out and get pissed off. Because, you know,
patience is not AJ's friend.
I'm an impatient bastard, man. You have no idea. So, but if you have a chance, please pick up this book. It's fantastic. You won't regret it.
And cool.
That's all I really have.
Well, it's never a bad thing, I think, to close out on comic book news.
No.
You know, especially comic books, actual comic books.
Before we head out, Martin, where are we going to see the ZKS guys next?
We have an upcoming event, the Claremont Packing House Comic Book and Sports Collectible Show. It's going to be happening at the obvious Claremont Packing House. Awesome place to hang out, and they have a really cool pita pit restaurant right around the corner that serves a delicious lunch that we always end up at. And yeah, come check out ZKS and the Zombie Beauty Pageant Queen and Queen's Court, who will be taking photos with fans and promoting the new upcoming Zombie Beauty Pageant. Pass that one over to you.
October 27th, Inland Empire, the third annual Inland Empire Zombie Beauty Pageant will be coming back to the Redlands Fox Event Center. This is going to be bigger and better than the previous years. It just grows every year, and I just can't imagine just how fat I'm going to be next year. but it's an awesome experience. It's a lot of fun, so please try to make it out. We will see the crowning of a new queen. You can head over to... where do we have the trailer up? We don't have the trailer up yet. Coming Monday, we'll have some great contestant announcements as well as the new trailer for this year, so it should be fun.
Yes, definitely. And please come take pictures with us. We like to hang out with fans and hear, you know, their take on the Zombie Kill Squad comic book, and that's part of the reason the cosplay guys like to come out and pose, in addition to hanging out with the Zombie Beauty Queens and other beauty pageant contestants. They're pretty. They're dangerous, but they're still fun to take a photo with, and the ZKS will be there to protect you.
And we'll also be recruiting for new members of ZKS, so if you have interest or if you're curious about what it takes to become a member, just head on over and you can talk to them in person and get some information and watch them sweat. Sweat! The rhythm.
I'm still holding out hope that it's going to be a cool day.
Let the rhythm move you. Anyway, so I've got nothing else. This wraps up our 117, what number are we on?
You're right, 117. It's okay. I understand you're getting old and serenading people on the podcast. But yeah, I think we should end when you start to sing anytime.
Anytime we start to sing?
Yeah. It's up there. They're going into song to close out the show.
Yep,
see you guys later.
Yep,
bye. Curtain closed. Hook off the stage.
Yep. So yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 117 where we get to talk a lot. Check out the Midnight Movie Maniacs, our weekly podcast, where we'll be talking about movies that we see. What are we seeing this week? I believe we're seeing Two Guns.
This week is Two Guns, based in the comic book world as well, so this ought to be cool.
I'm excited for this one. Denzel Washington, Mark Wahlberg, and some hot Latino chicks.
Yeah. We also have Elysium coming up in August, Kick-Ass 2. It's going to be a big month for the Midnight Movie Maniacs.
Yep, so please tune into those and check out those podcasts. If you don't like hearing us talk for too long, those are great podcasts for you because they only go about 15 minutes. So, and with that, for Martin, this is AJ. Thank you guys again for tuning in, and we'll see you sometime soon.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.